Good afternoon and welcome to the podcast of the Lotus Eaters. This is episode 325. Today I'm your host Harry, alongside my compatriot here, Thomas.
Hello.
And today we're going to be taking a look into some stories, including whether the Capitol officers are currently spying on Republicans, congressmen, the F1 drivers being told not to kneel anymore, and also Biden's excellent plan for crack pipes for equity. Mm. And before we get into any of those stories, we've got a few announcements to make. First of all, we're going to show you Thomas's new article, The Homelessness of the Affluent Millennial, if you wouldn't mind giving you a rundown
of
that.
Well, I've been a little bit obsessed with watching Doomer memes of late, and I've been kind of, I suppose, reflecting on my own experiences and thinking about some people who I know who are, shall we say, high flyers in the corporate world. I came to the realisation that these Doomer memes, despite the fact that they represent people, or supposed to represent people in the lower strata of societies, and the philosophy kind of applies to even those millennials who actually do very well for themselves, and they find themselves in a permanent state of spiritual homelessness that actually puts them on the same plane, and that this might actually be an expression of a lost era rather than an expression of just people being on the substrata of society. So I thought I would write this through a kind of a creative narration, if you like.
Okay, is that a free article?
It's a premium article.
It's a premium article?
Yes.
So if you've got bronze tier and above, you'll be able to read that. And if you've got silver tier, we've got an audio track from Jonathan Crowe. Should be interesting. I tend to see the Doomer memes as being a bit performative depression, but I'll be interested to see your take on that. If we move along, there's a new video, a premium video, between me and Carl talking about the horse-paced narrative. As you can imagine, this is the kind of stuff that we can't put on YouTube. So we've got it behind the bronze paywall on the website. We're talking about the dreaded ivermectin and its various uses, and the fact that it was a Nobel Prize winning drug before it was considered just horse paste that would poison you if you even dare to think about taking it. And also, just a reminder for everyone as well, we've got a premium hangout going on this afternoon at 3:30, which is going to be Carl and Josh hosting that, I believe, where they're going to be talking about man-made horrors beyond comprehension, where Carl's going to talk about science again, and Josh is going to try and defend science from him. And finally, before we get into anything else, remember to follow us all on Getter. If we look here, you can see that all of our profiles on Getter, so you can follow me at Harry Lotus Eaters, or Thomas at Thomas Dowling, and you can just follow the rest of us. We've all got some pretty interesting things to say, so look forward to seeing you there. And without any further ado, let's get into the news. So, are Capitol officers intimidating January 6th dissidents? And when I use that term, January 6th dissidents, I don't mean the people who were actively involved in the riot that went on January 6th. As far as we know, the vast majority of them have either been questioned or arrested. And if you want more information on what's happened to them specifically, you can go and take a look at my premium video, What Happened to the January 6th Rioters. That's on premium content on the website. But no, this is actually looking into some of the Republican congressmen and other representatives who've been saying some things about January 6th that the establishment aren't particularly happy with. So the main culprit recently has been Congressman Troy Nels, who I'd not really heard of before this.
Nor me.
But he is a Republican congressman for Texas, and he just yesterday, or just this morning, or I think it was yesterday, put out this Twitter thread talking about how the Capitol Police seem to, as far as he can tell, be taking some rather shady steps into looking into him. So let's just take a look through this thread before we go any further, just so we've got the context. So here he starts with, breaking: the Capitol Police Intelligence Division investigated my office illegally, and one of my staff has caught them in the act. So if we keep scrolling down, just so we can take a look at this full thing. On November 20th, 2021, Capitol Police entered my office without my knowledge and photographed confidential legislative products protected by the speech and debate clause enshrined in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 6. 2 days later, on Monday, November 22nd, 2021, Thanksgiving week, three intelligence officers attempted to enter my office while the House was in recess. Upon discovering a member of my staff, special agents dressed like construction workers began to question him as to the contents of a photograph taken illegally 2 days earlier. And he asked the Capitol Police, saying, never informed myself or senior level staff of the investigation, and the reasons are clear. They had no authority to photograph my office, let alone investigate myself or members of my staff, so why is the Capitol Police leadership maliciously investigating me in an attempt to destroy me and my character? Maybe it's because I've been a vocal critic of Nancy Pelosi, the January 6th committee, and Capitol Police leadership about the handling of January 6th, the death of Ashley Babbitt, and the subsequent sham investigation. So you can tell just from that last statement there. Oh, apparently my shirt is rubbing the microphone. Apologies to everyone who may have found that a bit distracting. But yeah, so you can see from that he's not been saying the kindest things about those involved in the investigation into January 6th.
Raising skepticism.
And it seems as though this is just speculation. These are claims and allegations made on his part, but if we are to take them at face value, it seems as though some people within the establishment might be taking steps to intimidate or frame him for something.
Yeah, I can't think of why else they would do this.
Yeah, it seems very strange behaviour. But before we actually go into how the Capitol Police responded, let's take a little bit of a look into Nels and how it was that he was involved with January 6th when it happened. So we've got a Fox News article here reflecting on protecting the House chamber on January 6th with makeshift weapon. I refused to leave. So if we scroll down here, just a bit further down, so we can see some of the images in here, John, just a bit further down. Here we go. You can see in blue, that is Troy Nels,
right.
Which means that unlike AOC, we actually have confirmed photographic evidence that he was at the not the Capitol building. I almost called it the Parliament building.
Yeah.
He was at the Capitol building when the riot was taking place. So we can kind of take his word for what was said.
An actual witness.
Yes, this isn't just him posting an Instagram story crying about some security guard trying to find him and taking the whole situation the wrong way. So in this article, Nels said that he heard a gunshot in the Speaker's lobby just outside the House chamber door. He believes that that was the shot fired by Lieutenant Michael Byrd that killed Ashley Babbitt, the 35-year-old Californian woman and U.S. Air Force veteran. Before this, he had been in the main chamber of the building, I believe, when they'd barricaded, and when he heard that there was gunshots and other such things going off, he rushed to try and protect the police officers and defend the barricades that were being put up just in case. Babbitt had tried to climb through one of the doors where the glass was broken when the shot was fired, according to the Justice Department. As a former law enforcement officer, Nels had high praise for the rank-and-file officers who were protecting the Capitol that day, and he says that the protesters who committed acts of violence against them belong in prison. But he strongly disagrees with the decision to clear Byrd of any wrongdoing in the shooting of Babbitt. Nels said that the shooting was unjustified. Babbitt didn't even see him there, Nels said. Ashley Babbitt didn't even know that there was a gun being drawn at her. She would never have jumped through that damn window if she would have known that. Ashley Babbitt was murdered that day. So very strong words coming from him. Not the sort of thing the establishment likes to hear.
When
they cleared Byrd of any wrongdoing, as is stated in there. And he's also gone on to make further statements on the January 6th anniversary this year in 2022, where he released this statement. It was the first event of its kind in American history and a black eye for the country, for the American people. It should never have happened. The intelligence reports were there and Capitol leadership chose not to act on them. Nancy Pelosi had every chance to impartially investigate the security failures of that day, but she didn't. Instead, she used the hyperpartisan January 6th commission as a weapon against President Trump and chose to take no responsibility for her failures to protect the Capitol grounds. One year earlier, there are still many questions to be answered. Why did the Capitol Police not act on their intelligence findings on the days leading up to January 6th? Why was the deployment of the National Guard delayed? Why has this sham of a congressional committee not investigated Ray Epps, who's a name who in recent months has been showing up more and more often because there is some very strange footage floating around of him potentially it looks like trying to encourage people to break into the Capitol building and start the riot. I remain committed to the uncovering the failures of January 6th and will do everything in my power from ever happening again. So you can tell from here and the language previously used that he's not someone that the Democrats could accuse of being pro-rioters.
No.
Not the way that they've tried to smear Ted Cruz as potentially having helped start the riot, although I'm sure they would probably just say that by his virtue of being a Republican that he was helping to stoke the flames of hatred.
Yeah, but there's absolutely no sign of an endorsement here. The wrongdoing can only be by deduction that he pointed the finger at something that Nancy Pelosi could have done better.
Yes, and the Capitol Police themselves.
Of course.
But politicians and police officers have never been known to be vindictive. Mm. But the Capitol Police released a letter responding to this. If you just click on the image so that I can take a read of this. Dear Representative Nels, I have received your letter dated January 26, 2022. As we discussed on January 21st, while on routine building patrol at 3:35 p.m. in the Longworth building on Saturday, November 20th, Officer Kevin Diaz saw that the door to your office suite was wide open. Per our policies, he went inside to see if anyone was there. He announced his presence and entered the office. He did not see anyone inside, but did see the words body armor on a whiteboard along with the marking of an X on a rough map of the Rayburn building. Concerned that this was possibly a threat, he took a photograph of it and contacted the command center. The matter was then referred to special agents in our Protective Services Bureau. The assigned agent spoke to your staff the following Monday and received a satisfactory explanation for the writings on the whiteboard. The matter was then closed and no further action was taken by the department. So, a reasonable enough statement, even though the actual scenario it's describing seems perhaps a bit far-fetched if you're a bit more suspicious mind than I am.
Yes.
But what we've got here appears to be a he said, she said sort of situation where, well, we've got Nels on one hand saying one thing and then the police on the other hand saying another thing. They did release another further statement just reinforcing what they'd said there, saying the United States, if you want to move along just so we've got that up, the United States Capitol Police is sworn to protect members of Congress. If a member's office is left open and unsecured without anyone inside the office, USCP officers are directed to document that and secure the office to ensure nobody can wander in, steal, or do anything else nefarious, which is reasonable. Mm. But at the same time, seeing a whiteboard printed with some stuff saying on it, saying body armor X, and then taking photographs of it, could be seen as potentially, yeah. You could say it's...
And from this description, you wouldn't... That there isn't any kind of declaration that they should be as inquisitive as that officer clearly was.
Yes, it doesn't seem that they should be taking anything into account. Like, oh, it looks as though this whiteboard has plans for world domination or another attempt to overthrow the Capitol or something.
If you were adhering to this description, you would just shut the door and have done with it, most likely.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any repudiation either to the idea that he was this officer was taking photographs of stuff that he shouldn't have been, which I believe is protected by the Constitution for the congressman. They're not supposed to be able to have, you know, photographs taken of their legislative documents and other such things. If it's not in the Constitution, it's certainly in a law somewhere. And Nels has responded to this just basically saying, if you want to click on this, John, the chief manager's statement is a mischaracterization of the events, omits key details, and fails to respond to the most troubling actions of his department. Nowhere did he mention the photograph that was taken of my constitutionally protected legislative priorities, nor did he mention the three agents wearing work clothes that returned to my office without advance notice for further questioning regarding the initial entry. In what world does Capitol Police leadership encourage officers to enter a member's private office, take photographs, collect evidence, dispatch intelligence agents to question staff, and then say that's not an investigation? I'm looking forward to the OIG investigation into this matter, since Capitol Police leadership cannot be relied upon to hold themselves accountable. Mm-hmm. I also respectfully ask the Capitol Police to release the photo that prompted the criminal investigation. And if we move along, we can also see that he's put it on Twitter as well, just saying, Capitol Police, release the photo. If that photo is so suspicious, then why don't they let everyone see it? I mean, if they've already cleared up that no wrongdoing was done, and the whole situation was just a one-off that wasn't supposed to be anything, why can't we just release the photograph?
Yeah, and then just deflate the entire situation.
Yeah, if it's so suspicious, if it really required you to take a photograph of that whiteboard with that information, why not? What's the harm? But they haven't.
Because there's something to hide, clearly.
Potentially, that's what it appears to be. And if we move along again, we can see that he has appeared on Tucker Carlson recently to discuss the situation. Tucker Carlson, of course, being somebody who has also had his issues with how January 6th was investigated, his issues with the events leading up to January 6th, and his own criticisms of the investigation into people like Ray Epps, and has not been particularly quiet about it. He has had multiple segments on his show in the past talking about his issues with the investigation, what he thinks might have been the real cause of the investigation, potential FBI involvement, although once again, we're just reporting on all of this, we're not making any claims or statements ourselves, but As a result of this, Tucker, in the past year, seems to have been on the foul side of some investigations himself, where the NSA leaked his private emails to use as leverage against him. So he went on to a television show and said, "I learned that, and this is going to come out soon, that the NSA leaked the contents of my email to journalists in an effort to discredit me. I know because I got a call from one of them saying, oh, this is what your email was about. I got a call before air, like 7:15, from a journalist I know, and like not many left, but I do like this person, and he repeated back to me what's in my email. He got it because the NSA had leaked it. The NSA did not immediately respond to a message Wednesday seeking its reaction to Carlson's most recent accusation, and he said last week," and this is from the article's perspective, "on his Fox News program that the NSA is monitoring our electronic communications and is planning to leak them in an attempt to take his show off air. Tucker Carlson has never been an intelligent target of the agency, and the NSA has never had any plans to try and take his program off the air," the NSA said in a rare statement issued last Tuesday. "So it is not in any way a figment of my imagination," Carlson maintained. "It's confirmed, it's true, they're not allowed to spy on American citizens, they are, and I think they are more ominously, they are using information they gather to put leverage and to threaten opposition journalists, people who criticize the Biden administration, and it's happening to me right now." And I think that's shocking, and I don't think we should put up with it in a free country.
Quite.
And the other interesting thing is this, because I looked into it a little bit further. I do believe that eventually the NSA maybe didn't cop out to having released or hacked into his emails, but they did cop out to the fact that they had uncovered his name in certain documentation, which from what I'm aware is not something that they are supposed to do.
No, it's still pretty cynical.
Yes, it's still very cynical and does hint at the fact that they may have been looking into him somewhere down the line in a way that he describes. So, and the final thing for here is that Republican senators in general have been demanding that leadership at the Capitol Police be investigated for monitoring citizens. So several Republicans signed a letter to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Committee on House Administration Chairwoman Zoe Lofgren, calling on them to investigate the reports of Capitol Police monitoring lawmakers and citizens. Representative Andy Biggs, a Republican, led the letter exclusively obtained by Fox News Digital with 33 of his GOP colleagues to Pelosi and Lofgren regarding reports that the Capitol Police have dug into the backgrounds of people who met with lawmakers. Recent reports state that the Capitol Police are surveilling members of Congress, congressional staff, and their Capitol visitors, Biggs told Fox News. If those reports are true, that the Capitol Police force is actively looking for and reviewing private information, then this is a gross violation of American civil liberties and an abuse of power.
Absolutely.
I'm calling on Speaker Pelosi and Chairwoman Lofgren to do what is best for the American people and look into this troubling report. The letter points to an explosive Politico report stating that the Capitol Police reportedly saying that the Capitol Police reportedly were monitoring members of Congress, their staff, constituents, and supporters raises serious constitutional concerns. The Republicans wrote that the report revealed the Capitol Police were also monitoring the online activity of congressional staff and individuals who meet with members of Congress, and that the force is reviewing property tax information to learn the owners of the building where the meetings taking place. To learn the owners of the buildings where the meetings were taking place, as well as reviewing online information to determine if any of the meeting attendees have contacts with foreign nationalists. So it does all sound
nationals.
Nationals. God, I'm really... I know Callum's not in, but he might as well be right now. Apologies. Additionally, Capitol Police were directed to look for information on donors and staff that would cast a member in a negative light, the letter reads. If true, these allegations are serious violations of American civil rights and civil liberties. Our constituents have the right to petition Congress, and they should be able to exercise this right without fear that the Capitol Police will scrutinize their property taxes, social media, or relationships. The lawmakers said that the report also leaves many serious questions unanswered, such as if the Capitol Police routinely looks into the backgrounds of Americans meeting with lawmakers, or if the investigating has been done with the knowledge and approval of the lawmaker they're meeting with. So all of this is pretty serious allegations.
Oh God, really,
and it all comes up to sum up to lead to quite a picture, along with Nell's allegations, alongside Tucker Carlson's allegations, that the American government or certain institutions within the American government seem to be overstepping the boundaries a little bit. And like they say, violating people's civil liberties and civil rights, which is definitely worth looking into.
I mean, this is pretty Soviet level encroachment, isn't it?
Yes, if you're meeting with somebody, we need to look into every aspect of their background just to make sure they're not a dissident.
Mm. Just remember, Tucker, you did not see graphite.
Mm. Mm. So we know that Nels was there at January 6th. We know that he was actively supporting the police officers, unlike so many of the defund the police politicians who came out afterwards and praised them as defending democracy. And we know that he's asking all of the questions that the establishment don't like. And we also know that they seem to be looking into all of the people who may be meeting with these kinds of representatives. So that's the story for now, and we'll see how that goes. But I don't think it paints a pretty picture of American politics.
No, it does not. It's very, very damning. And a part of me hopes that this really isn't true. But I'm afraid to say it's not looking good for the Democrats, is it?
I wouldn't put it past them. The Democrats are slimy. I think is a mild way of putting it.
Yeah. Well, I've got a small white pill to offer you. It's not much, but it's a small one nonetheless.
We're bringing White Pill Wednesdays back, people.
Yes, here we go. Pill Wednesday is back, unofficially. But as we know, in the immediacy of George Floyd's death in May 2020, following outright misreporting with regards to how he died, a group of thugs, outright liars and pseudo-intellectual sophists known as Black Lives Matter mobilised around Floyd's death as a means of taking over the entire culture industry. Their aim, as we know, is not to end racism, but completely redefine what we understand racism to be in a way that's fundamentally racist.
That's the thing I always find funny. You can see them all there taking the knee, their shirts. Mm. End racism. Okay, do it.
Yeah.
Do it then. Okay, end racism, then stop making race such a pivotal factor in the way that relationships between people are considered.
Absolutely. This is what anti-racists have been saying for, what, about 100 years, until, of course, the subversion started.
Until anti-racism took on a whole new meaning.
Yes. Became its opposite. But anyway, Colin Kaepernick's gesture, the taking of the knee, renewed itself as a symbol of anti-racism in 2020 to spread like a mind virus throughout the entire sports industry ever since, which has continued to be the case, I'm afraid to say. Premier League teams are still taking the knee every single week, insisting that it isn't political. And Formula One even reserved a special place in its schedule during the race or before the race for the drivers to be the centre of attention so that everyone could applaud them for their stunning bravery, as you can see over here. Maybe you guys
at
home
really?
Can see it as well. Oh, yes, they did.
Oh, no.
But there is some good news on the subject of motorsport, at least. And that is that Stefano Domenicali, the CEO of the Formula One group, has announced that F1 drivers will no longer be allowed to take the knee before the start of the race.
Based.
So, if we scroll down a little bit, Formula One will no longer set time for drivers to take the knee ahead of races, as it looks to introduce more concrete actions to combat racism, Chief Executive Stefano Domenicali told Sky Sport on Tuesday. Formula One launched its We Race as One diversity, inclusion and sustainability platform in 2020, which included a pre-race moment when drivers gathered on the grid to express their support for the initiative with a gesture of their choice. I think it was the time to move from just a gesture recognising something that's really important to a plan, Domenicali said. I think the gesture has been an important gesture because we need to respect everyone as always, but now is the time to move on and take some other action.
So they're basically just going, right, you've had your chance, you've done it enough, now we're just moving on, guys. Time to close up shop, come on.
Yes, it's time to stop virtue signalling and start acting on the virtue.
Mm.
Now, of course, this doesn't necessarily mean good news, and I'm afraid to say it doesn't. But as you would expect, some have not taken this news very well at all, as you can see from someone who works for the Hamilton Access. Why is Stefano Domenicali, a white man, deciding when it's time to move on matters that have never concerned him? If the fight is for an inclusive and diverse sport, why aren't black people making these decisions? What do you know about this gesture? Well, I can tell you one thing, Denny. I've never heard of you before seeing this tweet, I'm afraid to say, but sport has absolutely no interest in diversity or inclusivity. Sport is pretty much just the epitome of excellence in one particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sport, whatever race you are, like, shouldn't have any importance. We've gone on just preaching to the choir here, but it shouldn't have anything to do with how we understand sport.
Well, we all know this, that sport was one of the first areas wherein racial boundaries got broken, purely because of the fact that it is taken entirely off of the idea of, are you good at the sport?
Yeah.
And if you're fantastic at the sport, especially if you're working on a national level with national teams, if the best guys playing a particular sport in your country are black in a time where you don't like black people that much, well, guess what? You're either going to to have to take on those black people or handicap your team.
Yes.
So it was one of the first areas where people could really break through.
Yeah, and whoever wins, regardless of their race, it is a sort of sporting achievement. Not an achievement for a particular minority, but an achievement for the competitor who wins it. That's part of the beauty of it. The very reason we can get behind these things is because it has universal value across the world, which is why sport is innately progressive and doesn't leave Black Lives Matter to guide it towards equality. But anyway, to be more explicit, the Hamilton Access's position here seems to be that only, well, at least this is what I've read, seems to be that only black people should be allowed to make decisions on the future of sport, or at least that's what's implied here. You could say that, well, if you actually, I don't know, replaced black with something else, that would amount to being a certain form of supremacy, would it not?
Yes.
But then, yeah, but I'm afraid there's more cope, as we can get up here. Yes, from Treacle. So F1 will no longer have to take the knee gesture ceremony. Now they have their first white World Drivers' Champion since 2016. They don't need to. Are we now finding out exactly why Abu Dhabi was manipulated? I know that you're not an F1 buff, but Abu Dhabi was an absolute farce because they basically just changed the rules, in short, so that there could be a last lap showdown between Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen won because Lewis was on worn tyres. It should never have got to that. He was robbed of his 8th world championship.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to be honest about that. But that has absolutely nothing to do with race and everything to do with the fact that Michael Massey just wanted to make a spectacle because it would make money.
So, also, is this tweet implying that because of the fact that we've got a world driving champion who's white for the first time in years, they've finally gone, right, now's the opportunity, guys. We could be racist again.
What's being assumed? Is it because we now don't have a black world champion, Lewis Hamilton, of course, that this is just a form of cope from the FIA, that finally we can drop our tools and go back to being the white supremacist institution that we always were, which is absolutely nonsense. But it's just a load of absolute nonsense, basically. But anyway, we must move on forward to explain why this is not entirely good news. There's a particular reason why the FIA have made this move, and it isn't because they see the gesture as counterproductive and cringeworthy, as obviously we hoped would be the reason. It's because they've opted to extend their non-white engineering scholarship program, which they haven't called it a non-white engineering scholarship program, but this is what it is, as I will explain in a minute. I didn't know about this until yesterday, but they've extended it until 2025. So if we scroll down a little bit so I can read it out. Formula One has announced that it will extend its funding commitment to the Formula One Engineering Scholarship Programme for unrepresented groups until 2025, continuing its drive to increase diversity within the sport. The Formula One Engineering Scholarships were launched last year following a US $1 million donation from a US $1 million donation, I should say, from non-executive chairman of Formula One, Chase Carey. The programme has so far successfully supported 10 students who have begun placements in their undergraduate and postgraduate engineering degrees at leading universities in the UK and Italy. Each scholarship covers the full cost of a student's tuition, together with living expenses, for the full duration of their degree, so very generous. The programme will now be extended for a further 4 years, enabling scholarships to be offered to 10 more students each year from 2022 to 2025. Inclusive. Now, everyone try not to vomit at this part coming up.
Oh, here we go.
Are committed to increasing diversity and opportunity within this incredible sport, said F1's president and CEO Stefano Domenicali. And I am pleased to confirm that we will be expanding our program for scholars until 2025, providing fantastic opportunity for some incredibly talented students to begin their journeys with Formula One. We want to continue to ensure that their talents from unrepresented groups has meaningful opportunities. If the first 10 scholars already beginning their studies following Chase's incredible donation to fund the scholars in their first year. We want to continue and build on the foundations of the programme in the years ahead. So yeah, they're replacing a pretty empty gesture with a commitment to extending a scholarship that, by the sounds of it, gives preference to those not deemed to be or considered as privileged.
I hate that term in this context as well, because by deeming them as not being privileged and then therefore handing them out entitlements, you are in creating an inherent contradiction by making them a new privileged class all in itself.
Yeah.
It's a ridiculous contradiction.
No, it's absolutely insane. But Cambridge University is one of the partners in this project, so let's take a look at the application form, shall we? If we scroll down a bit so you can actually see the eligibility criteria, what do you notice isn't on it? So it says, to be eligible for the F1 scholarship, applicants must either identify as female and have any category of ethnicity, or identify as male and have one of the following categories of ethnicity: Bangladeshi, Pakistani, Black African, Black Caribbean, Black Other, Mixed White/Black. What's missing?
good, good God. I know that this has been going on for ages. I know that this has been something that has been building for a while, and it's something that special interest groups have been pushing for years. I still find it shocking to see literal racial eligibility criteria, and the fact that there's no white people allowed unless you're mixed, and no Asians either, other than Bangladeshi and Pakistani.
Yeah.
There are more Asians than just from those two areas.
See, the fact that we almost feel kind of somber, or shall we say bored, and have low energy in discussing cases like this, is because it's become almost so normal.
I hate it. The fact that it has become so normalised, like, it really does sicken me to a certain extent, because of the fact that I assume you as well, grew up in an era that was beginning to reach a sort of, not necessarily entirely, but sort of post-racial society, at least in the way that, you know, civilians would interact and communicate with one another. All for this to just bring us screaming back into the 1960s, it's almost.
Reverted back to myth just after we hit the right spot. That's what it feels like. But as you can see, like the University of York scholarship that I drew attention to a few weeks ago, this is a scholarship that, well, non-white people are implicitly prohibited from applying for, because it doesn't actually say whites don't apply, because that would, you know, be explicit racism. But that
would sound like Jim Crow or something.
Yes, but in practice, I'm afraid to say this is what this amounts to. And so take note, viewers, if you're white, poor, and or disabled by whatever extent, F1 doesn't want you because you're too privileged to apply for it. Sounds a bit like racism to me, but anyway, if we go back to the first page, the very first page, and scroll right down to the very bottom. I think not to the very bottom, the very bottom of the text, because it's the second to last, but there we are. So it says, working with the Black Collective of Media and Sport, a leading group for black professionals in the media, and the Blair Project, who are inspiring the next generation of engineers from disadvantaged socioeconomic backgrounds, F1 has already welcomed into the organisation apprentices who are studying mechanical engineering and interns who, with more to be appointed later this season. So I'd quite like to have a look at some of these.
So they're working with the collection of black professional communists.
Yes. Shall we have a look at who they're working with? Let's take a look at the Blair Project to begin with. If we scroll down a bit, you'll see a familiar face. Or at least I did when it came up. Yeah, the tab wasn't quite as big as that when I opened it up.
Well, we can squint a little bit to get the right so that we can see the image properly. Where is the image? Give John a second. He's just sorting this out for us. There we go.
It is too hilarious to miss. But
there we go. That seems to have fixed it a bit.
Well, it does actually have a picture of Prince Harry right on the front. Yeah, there we are.
Oh, there he is. Oh, yeah, there he is in the background.
You can see him pumping a fist right in the background there.
He never misses an opportunity. Opportunity nowadays to be in the background of someone else's photograph.
Yeah. And if you scroll down just a little bit, you can see that they're uttering what the buzzwords of the year, there we are, diversity and inclusion, but they're mainly just committed to making karting kind of more ecologically sustainable and accessible, so that more people of all backgrounds can get into sport. Of course, doing this under the concept of diversity is counterproductive, as we all know.
They also going into climate change activism. You're in racing, you're burning a lot of fuel, really doing your work for the climate there.
Yes. It's a shame, because if we move on to the next page within this page now, which is here, the Blair Project, if we scroll down so we can see the text a little bit. There we
John's
are.
Just fixing it up again. Yeah.
So the Blair Project is a disruptive social enterprise that exists to inspire the next generation of high-tech engineers through electric karting and digital manufacturing, and design project-based activities to infuse young people to pursue careers in the fast-growth science, engineering, technology, and digital sectors. You see, it would be a shame, because if it wasn't for this commitment to diversity, which is intrinsically problematic, I'd be all in favour of this project. You know, it sounds perfectly fine and actually quite meaningful.
I hate the use of a lot of terms in this segment, but the use of the term disruptive,
that part of it's obnoxious. I don't even know what they mean by it.
Well, it's one of those things where they're taking, I assume what they mean is that they're taking the normative aspects of society and tearing them apart so that they can create a new foundation to build society on. Racing, that's generally speaking when they use those terms, disruptive.
If that's the intended message, then screw them, it's rubbish. I've got nothing to do with it. if we move on to the Black Collective of Media and Sport homepage, so I took a look at them, and guess what? I found them to be kind of a little bit sensationalistic. if you scroll down, you can actually see their statements.
The Black Communists, yes. The British wing of the Black Panthers are a bit sensationalist.
Yes, I mean, just take a look at this. How bad are things in the sports media? Take a moment to reflect on the engagement and participation of black communities in sport. It is estimated that up to 30% of professional footballers in the English Premier... You can already see where this is going. I needn't even really read it out. I feel like a broken record. Focusing on inequality of outcome says nothing about inequality in the process, and it never has. Unless you take the time to look at, for example, how many black people are applying for these positions and then assess that outcome with respect to their credentials. So pressure groups arguing for just having a larger demographic of people within a certain trade or industry, I've said time and time again, don't care for the trade or industry itself, and we should not blimmin' listen to them because they don't care about the sport or the sports media. They're explicit in their position that they're happy for sports or whatever, for all of society for that matter, I would say, to break down for as long as they see more diversity at the peak of the pyramid. Diversity means nothing. It means it's just an abstract metaphysics. That's all it is.
It's a buzzword at this point. I wouldn't even necessarily want to grant it the grandiosity of the term metaphysics because it's just a buzzword.
Pseudo-metaphysics.
It just gets people's heads switched on. They think diversity, they think that means good. If I support diversity, I am good person. Mm.
Well, I did actually do some further investigating on this site and managed to find a video which I believe covers that one of their D-word conferences. And you can imagine what that D-word is. And this is, I imagine, an event where they have kind of media professionals who are presumably black mixed with others who come to discuss how we proceed from their point of view. I found myself absolutely aghast with the editing. Not so much the conference itself, even though that's bad enough. But the editing of this. So let's give it a watch, shall we?
What on earth? I'm in the club, boys.
What is this?
Okay, so for anybody not watching and just listening, we're not just watching, a compilation of club bangers or anything. What we're seeing are... Oh... Is it going to actually go into... Nope, it's... we were seeing a compilation of clips of
The statement of intent, basically.
The reason why we don't have more black writers is they don't believe they can do it. They think it's a white-dominated, white-class-dominated industry.
Structural
white
problem.
That doesn't cater for them.
Okay. I could barely hit...
We need to do more, but I think there's sometimes a little bit of a poverty of aspiration sometimes that people probably don't come to us and say, what are you going to do on an individual basis, on a general basis? And I think we need to be pushed.
Well, from what they're basically saying is that the disparity between demographics is the problem. The very fact that you have so many white people assuming places in sports media is precisely why black people feel impoverished in their own minds to want to pursue careers in it. And as much as I'm sympathetic with why someone may think that, it's only because you subscribe to the racial narrative that they're not going to accept you because you're of a different race.
It's a very strange and self-defeating mindset to take on.
I just want to
point out once again for anybody who wasn't watching, that was a compilation of clips from the conference that was being done where everybody seemed to be very mild-mannered and having discussions with one another. For some reason, set to that music, I would just say, I hope a white person edited that, because if that editing was a display of black excellence, you're not doing yourself a favour.
I mean, there are two types of people who produce a video like this. The first person who comes to mind is Colin Kaepernick himself.
Yes. Well,
Because he's a moron.
Yeah, he is a moron, and any opportunity for sort of self-aggrandizement or marketing is going to be right up his alley.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I had the displeasure of seeing the trailer for his Netflix series, I pretty much just lost hope.
Yeah, it doesn't make the whole
Not that
thing.
I had any hope before.
It doesn't make the whole thing seem particularly professional.
Yeah.
Does it?
But there is actually another type of person who produces a video like this, and that's someone who's actively trying to make a mockery of their entire.
Yeah, it came across like a parody that felt like something out of Brass Eye.
Yeah.
Here's our diversity and equity, and it just comes out with some like club bangers dropping off the ground. Oh, God.
Look, this is where pursuing excellence leads you. That is what the message of that is when you use that music to present that. I mean, as again, flawed as the philosophy is, insofar as the content of what's being discussed is concerned, that just hammers home how absurdly insane they are. And if we can actually have a, or the person who edited that video, any of that, if that's even representative of what they're trying to do.
But diversity mood film.
Diversity mood.
Let me get you into the mood, spiritual the mood diversity space.
But I'd like to end with just having a look at their statement on the D word. We don't have much time, so I won't cover it for very long. But it should be on the, I think, just a little bit further up. Yes. Yeah, just at the top.
There it is, John, just with the, where it starts with the D word.
The argument against diversity has always been that employers want the best. But the D word challenged decision makers to focus on redefining what we mean by the best.
Whoever can win.
Well, I'm sorry, what else is the best supposed to be defined? Like, if the best is not defined by the industry that you want to go in, what does the best amount to it, or what you decide that it is?
Well, in sports, the best literally means who wins.
Yes.
That's all it means. It doesn't need to mean who's got the right colour, yes, skin tone or anything.
So this is an explicit declaration, really, of intent that they want to change what the best amounts to. They don't want the best to be defined as, well in accordance to professional excellence, if you like. They want to subordinate it into intersectionality.
Well, they want the competition to be highest percentage of melanin.
Yeah. So anyway, to summarise, whilst the news about F1 drivers no longer being able to take the knee is a welcome relief for many of us, it is structurally very much committed to the insane diversity agenda still. If these are the people shaping its future, I'm genuinely concerned, both for industry and sports, just because of the philosophy behind the changes being made. Needless to say, race should never be considered as an antecedent principle for employment or a basis to restructure an institution. End of story.
Absolutely agree. And related to that, interestingly enough, our next segment is on something else that is supposedly being done for the benefit of black and other marginalized communities, which is the Biden administration has decided it would be a fantastic idea for the sake of equity and diversity to begin handing out free crack pipes.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes.
This, that's cultural enrichment.
This can only go well. So we've got this article from the Free Beacon, although this has been reported on by a number of other publications, saying that the Biden admin to fund crack pipe distribution to advance racial equity. And I'm sure this is going to really help California in particular. California is very well known for its rampant drug use and people defecating on the street. But we'll get into that in a moment. The Biden administration is set to fund the distribution of crack pipes to drug addicts as part of its plans to advance racial equity. The $30 million grant program, I repeat, the $30 million dollar grant program. This is what your taxes are going towards. And if Build Back Better had got through, thank God for Joe Manchin, wasn't it, blocking it, this is what Biden would mean by Building Back Better, which closed applications Monday and will begin in May. Will provide funds to nonprofits and local governments to help make drug use safer for addicts. Let's make drug use safer for addicts. Let's not put a stopper between them and getting the drugs and maybe letting them get clean and sorting their own life out. Let's continue to help them hurt themselves.
Yeah, let's just pave the way for their own self-destruction.
Mm-hmm. Included in the grant, which is overseen by the Department of Health and Human Services, are funds for smoking kits / supplies. A spokesperson for the agency told the Washington Free Beacon that these kits will provide pipes for users to smoke crack cocaine, crystal methamphetamine, and any illicit substance. Anything you can get your hand on, a bit of gravel off the ground, you know, give that a little smoke.
What were they smoking to come up with this as a policy?
Well, I assume that maybe Hunter Biden had a hand in this. He's like, I've got a great idea, guys. This is going to be pretty radical, but you're going to have to roll with me. HHS said that the kits aim to reduce the risk of infection when smoking substances with glass pipes, which can lead to infections through cuts and sores. Do you know what else is very negative and can lead to infections and other such issues, physical or mental or anything really? It's doing drugs, smoking crack, snorting cocaine, injecting heroin.
Or even immersing yourself in the culture at all.
Yes. Applicants for the grants are prioritized if they treat a majority of the undeserved communities, including African Americans and LGBTQ plus persons. What are you saying about black Americans and gay culture there, Biden? You're saying they might indulge a little bit more in drugs than other subcultures?
Isn't this a legitimate case of class genocide? As in, actually?
You could actually make the claim, you could make the argument.
How do we get the drug addicts off the bill? Just give them more drugs?
the problem will sort itself out. Jeez, this is that Mitchell and Webb look sketch where it's like, well, we need to eliminate poverty. Have we tried killing the poor? Not that we would actually kill the poor, but let's run the simulation.
Would it work on principle?
Yeah,
someone's
exactly.
Someone's taking that idea too seriously.
As established under President Joe Biden's executive order on advancing racial equity, Democratic-run cities such as San Francisco and Seattle have distributed smoking kits to residents in the past. Some local governments, however, have in recent years backed away from their smoking kit programs over concerns that they enable drug abuse.
You don't say.
Yes, I wonder if it's looking at cities like San Francisco and like Seattle and going, holy crap, look at what they've done to themselves. Let's not do that. And who could have seen this one coming, eh?
Or maybe they've had a red-pilled moment. But why is the government giving me drugs to take?
The government generally doesn't have good intentions in mind half the time.
No.
But Louisville, Kentucky, for example, allowed convenience stores to sell smoking kits, so you could just pop down your local corner shop and grab yourself a crack pipe for free, but later banned them. Legislators in Maryland ditched their distribution plan after facing backlash from local law enforcement and African-American leaders. And I think this is a very important thing to bring up, which is that the black communities that they're referring to, these African-American communities, are the ones most negatively affected by this kind of legislation and by these kinds of administrative choices, because they're the ones that have to live with the repercussions of seeing drug use enabled by the government. This kind of mollycoddling and drug use does not help anybody. And this is actually originally why, because obviously this is all operating under a critical race theory perspective and framing, this is why, if you're going to take one of their great examples of how the system is systemically evil and racist, is not an accurate example, that being the crack cocaine sentencing laws. Because, of course, they always like to bring up that crack cocaine gets harsher sentences than the use of normal cocaine. And crack cocaine is used more often by black people than normal cocaine, which is used more often by white people. And they use this as an example where they can go, see, you're just punishing black people. The reason that those laws were passed in the first place was because it was black leaders of those communities who saw the damage that the drug trade was doing on the community, saw that these kids were easily getting their hands on crack cocaine, ruining their lives as a result of it, and petitioned the government to do something about it. And that's what they did about
it. So it corresponded, ironically, to the lived experience of a black person.
I know, but we don't listen to those unless they're saying what we want them to say.
Oh, of course. Forgive me.
Sergeant Clyde Boatwright, president of the Maryland Fraternal Order of Police, said government resources are better spent on preventing drug abuse than making it safer. If we look at more of a preventative campaign as opposed to an enabling campaign, because if you're going to talk about behavior, this is enabling behavior. This is the sort of thing that your school teachers tell you not to do with your friends. Don't peer pressure and enable people. I think it will offer an opportunity to have safer communities with fewer people who are dependable on those substances.
Fewer people, yeah.
Yeah, there will, but it's a radical thought. Maybe don't give drug addicts more drugs. It'll help them. Great idea. Funding for the harm reduction grant program is provided through Democrats' American Rescue Plan, which the Senate passed along party lines after Vice President Kamala Harris, who cares so much about black communities and black prisoners in particular, cast a tie-breaking vote. Other equipment that qualifies for funding includes syringes, vaccinations, disease screening condoms, and fentanyl strips. The grant program will last 3 years and includes 25 awards of up to $400,000. An HHS spokesman declined to specify what is included in the smoking kits. Similar distribution efforts provide mouthpieces to prevent glass cuts, rubber bands to prevent burns, and filters to minimize the risk of disease. How about instead of making it easier to do drugs, you just make it more difficult for these people to do drugs?
Yes, and you
so they're not
down
ruining their lives with it.
Yeah, you double down on its circulation, impose stricter.
And as always, because everything is illegal unless the government's doing it, it is against federal law to distribute or sell drug paraphernalia unless authorized by the government. That's good to know, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
That's great to know. Everything's illegal unless the government does it. Taxes, please. And they add in a nice little thing to end on here, which is that President Biden's son, Hunter, is a longtime user of crack cocaine, just to throw that in there as one of the reasons they might be doing this. But yes, this is what Build Back Better was going to fund. And we've got another article here talking about why they're handing out the free crack pipes. The purpose of the program is to support community-based overdose prevention programs, syringe service programs, and other harm reduction services, the document said. The funding testing will be used for prevention activities to help control the spread of infectious diseases and the consequences of such diseases for individuals with or at risk of developing substance use disorders. Stop people doing drugs and getting addicted to them by making it easier for them to do drugs.
Yeah, this is getting into Brave New World territory now, isn't it?
Yes, take your soma and shut up.
Yes.
Is what the government is telling you right there. Here's your free drugs. Here's your reparations. Now leave us alone, pleb. One of the requirements for recipients of grant funding is to purchase equipment and supplies to enhance harm reduction efforts. Great, but as I've made reference to, there are human consequences to these kinds of sweeping legislative ideas and actions, and one of them being that in America alone, drug overdoses are a bit expensive to everybody. Mm-hmm. So this is an article on Yahoo News taken from ABC News. Overdose deaths cost the US $1 trillion annually, bipartisan report finds. Now, I need to point out that in this article, it doesn't point out the specific ways that it's costing people, but it might be potentially lost funds in businesses, lost funds from consumers being able to buy things because they're spending them on drugs instead. It could be the strain that it puts on the medical care system, because people who overdose on drugs end up going to hospital. And if they're overdosing on drugs, it might be their families left to foot the bill who might not be able to afford it, or they might just die. Who knows if they've got family, they're just a drug addict, and then nobody foots that bill. So, the drug overdose epidemic in the United States, now primarily driven by synthetic opioids like ultra-deadly fentanyl. I find it funny here as well, here, by the way, that they're finally admitting that fentanyl's quite deadly.
Yeah.
Interesting that they chose not to do that during a particular case last year, or tried to obfuscate it a little bit. Costs the nation roughly $1 trillion a year, according to new bipartisan congressional reports released on Tuesday. A White House Council of Economic Advisers assessment pegged the cost of the opioid crisis at $700 billion 3 years ago. The new report derives the new $1 trillion estimate based on the increase in overdose deaths seen since 2018. Drug overdose deaths have more than doubled in recent years, from about 44,000 in 2013 to more than 100,000 between May 2020 and April 2021. Overdose incidents are responsible for more deaths in the US each year than firearms, suicide, homicide, or car crashes, according to the report. So let's restrict people's access to firearms. Let's restrict people's... let's just restrict people's access to firearms. That'll stop people killing themselves and dying more often. But at the same time, let's make it easier to get drugs.
Let's just subsume their freedom as people into just an endless cycle of drug taking and drug recovery.
Yes, this is not going to help anybody. You give people the access to more drugs and the ability to do them more easily, and the obvious answer is obvious, you idiots.
It's almost as if they want to subsume the entire population to a culture of endless passivity.
But you don't understand, Tom. You don't understand. This is all part of the plan to equalize Americans of all shapes and sizes and all colors, because Biden had an executive order on racial equity that he signed last year that's been referred to in here. So in this amazing document, you can read such things as systemic racial disparities in education negatively impact learning outcomes for black students, and many face persistent gaps in reading and mathematics achievements. So let's turn their parents into crack addicts.
That's really going to help them, isn't it?
Yes, this will really help. Perhaps holding students and black citizens in general to similar, or if not the same, standards as you would anybody else in the country is what's actually going to be most beneficial to them.
Oh, no, but seeing them as equal moral agents is racist.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot that people can't hold themselves responsible for anything unless they're white.
What's your fragility?
This is my fragility and privilege speaking. Of course. Perhaps instead you should be promoting policies that don't encourage and propagate single-parent households, given that single-parent households are, no matter what race you are, the biggest single indicator of both academic and career-based success that you can see moving forward. If you're born as a white person into a single-parent household, chances are statistically that you're going to do much worse than a black kid raised in a two-parent household. These are just facts, but affirmative action, which Callum and I have covered recently, might be getting repealed a little bit soon, fingers crossed, has for a long time encouraged people to engage in the sort of practices that lead to single-parent households, including, for instance, I believe it's if you are unmarried with kids, then you get two welfare checks. If you're married, you only get the one welfare check. And what's it easier to do if you're not married? it's easier to just leave.
Yes.
Because you've got no legal repercussions for it. Increasing, and it goes on, they want to increase general understanding of systemic causes of educational challenges faced by many black students, whether these students are in urban, suburban, rural, or migrant learning environments, and working across executive departments and agencies to address these challenges. So nothing about actually improving educational standards or encouraging a good good learning environment or anything. Just teaching the children to see themselves as oppressed because of their skin color, teaching them to look across the room and see a white student and go, you're better than me, therefore I hate you. I mean, if you want to talk about encouraging particularly negative cultural attitudes, teaching a particular class of person to see themselves as being oppressed by everybody else is going to lead to some pretty negative results, as we have seen.
Yes.
And all of this doesn't really address any of those subcultural problems in the first place. You can't just bring in Big Daddy government to come and solve everything for you. As Milton Friedman has said, the government solution is often worse than the problem itself, as we've seen from things like affirmative action. All the government had to do was repeal all of the discriminatory laws from Jim Crow. They did that, but then they added loads of positive discrimination laws, which have encouraged the subcultural issues that we've seen in America since the late 1960s, moving on forward into the times that we're in now.
Perpetuated the racial divisions that we should be trying to resolve.
Yeah, and it just leads to special interest groups begging and pushing for benefits and creating basically national incidents at this point. Yeah. When you look at the George Floyd riots from a few years ago, if we'd like to move along. So Biden's racial equity policies focus of public the webinar on Thursday, this is from SF Gate, talking about how in the wake of the one-year anniversary of President Joe Biden's executive order on advancing racial equity, a coalition of advocacy groups is pushing for the administration to redouble its commitment to sweeping policy changes. So no matter what you do, no matter what you say that you're going to do, it's never going to be enough because you have let these people, let the special interests, these pressure groups, get their foot in the door, and they have realized, hold up, we can put pressure on for benefits. Whether or not it will actually benefit people's lives, either spiritually or materially, these figureheads of the movements, as we've seen from Patrice Cullors from BLM, are able to position themselves very nicely to receive a hefty chunk of the pie, and then retire into obscurity where they won't be hounded for the rest of their life because I made my money advancing racial equity. Policy Link and Race Forward, national non-profit organizations that advocate for social justice and racial equity policies, will host a webinar Thursday to review the Biden administration's performance over the past year. This event, dubbed Racial Equity, the Whole of Government Responsibility, so the government is responsible for you living a good life, is what they're telling you, will also include a discussion of the recent report, Advancing Racial Equity, in year two of the Biden administration, which outlines ways in which the federal government can further develop policies to address systemic racism and discrimination. This is the start of a long racial equity journey. I thought the start was like 5 years ago. I thought the start was when BLM originally started in the first place. Yeah. The start will always be whenever it's most convenient for them. The start will always be now because it will never be allowed to get past the opening line because there will always be something new that they want. This will never end.
They'll always get to change the goalposts on when and what the start point is.
But they hope the administration will build off this foundation and make their commitment to racial equity even more clear and well known. Speakers will address federal policies and how they impact state and local decision making. We really need the federal government to establish standards for racial equity because states across the country have been working at chipping away our rights, which I can only assume means they want me to present an ID before I vote, which is racist.
Oh, of course.
Even though most states give out state IDs for free. And it's really simple. And if you ask a black person on the street, they're not as stupid as the CRT scholars would like you to believe. They know how to get an ID.
But if someone can't bring themselves to go and get an identification card, then surely that's a form of systemic oppression against their tiredness.
It's victimization. The government offices are only open between these hours and I have to do these other hours of work. Oh, it's terrible. But it's basically just saying, government, give me free stuff.
Yeah.
That's what they want. That's all this ever ends up being, because that's what you do. You put pressure on the government to give you free stuff. And as Callum and I have covered recently, there are other elements of Biden's attempts to create racial equity, including his statement of black woman now for the Supreme Court pick, where Biden, the Supreme Court Justice Stephen Breyer is retiring. And Biden says he's going to announce his nominee to Phil Breyer's seat. And he reiterated his commitment to nominating a black woman to the nation's highest court. Our process is going to be rigorous. That's right. We're going to make sure she is both woman and black enough. I'm going to break out the colour swabs to make sure that I get the right shade to really help my political chances in the next election.
This is so backwards.
It is. It's in a classical sense, being a classical liberal, this is classically racist.
Yeah.
Is this going to be a difference now between neo-racism and classical racism? I may be a neo-racist, but at least I'm not a classical racist. I will select a nominee worthy of Justice Breyer's legacy of excellence and decency. While I've been studying candidates' backgrounds and writings, I have made no decision except one. The person I nominate will be someone with extraordinary qualifications, career, and experience and integrity. And that person will be the first black woman ever nominated to the United States Supreme Court. It's long overdue, in my view. I made the commitment during the campaign for president, and I will keep that commitment, or else I might lose at least 50% of my black voters, yes, is the unspoken sentence at the end of that. And I don't care if you think it's an arbitrarily overdue amount of time before one's there. Let someone get there by merit. I want the best person in a job, not whoever you've decided is appropriate based on their gender and skin colour.
Then it ceases to be an achievement for them, doesn't it? I mean, if anything, that is an expression of you could say implicit racism there, the belief that you don't think that a person of a different colour or race can get there on merit, which is nonsense.
Yeah, and you're just going to be people suffer from imposter syndrome enough on their day-to-day lives.
Yes.
Imagine being that person. You're on the Supreme Court just because you're a black woman. What kind of insane levels of imposter syndrome would you suffer from? Anyway, just to move on quickly, also just to reiterate that this stuff is never enough, because the special interest groups will never let it be enough.
So
progressives
not.
Have said to Biden on the Supreme Court, having a black woman is not enough. Progressive Democrats have a clear message to Joe Biden for whomever he nominates to the Supreme Court. Nominating a black woman is not enough. Who could have seen this one coming? Democrats from the left flank of Biden's party are beginning to lay out their demands for what type of person they want to replace the justice. We want somebody who's going to be reflective of the needs of working families and understands that we're moving toward an oligarchy in this country and their corporate interests with enormous power, said Senator Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, not Bernie Sanders.
So what we need is someone competent.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
I didn't mention any names, but I think we need the Supreme Court Justice who understands enormous economic pressures working families are under and understands the incredible power that the masters of the universe, of the universe and corporate interests have over this country and is prepared to stand up. That's right. He-Man's behind all of this. When asked if he had discussed this with the White House, he said yes. And God bless Bernie Sanders for trying to stay relevant. He's still hanging in there for some reason.
Yeah, there is something kind of base in what he's saying in this sense. He's trying to point out, or at least not consciously, but he's basically saying that it's...
He's trying to apply class principles to the nomination rather than CRT-based race principles.
In his statement, there is an argument that employing people on the ground, giving someone a position on the basis of race is a bad idea. What you actually need is someone who understands people in those particular positions that he's alluding to.
But don't you know AOC has something to say about it as well?
Oh, she always has something to say.
Of course, there is just an absolute abundance of legal genius and black women legal genius in this country. So I also think, well, if there's an abundance of black women, surely we've reached parity. Surely we've reached ideal representation. So there's one of the arguments. BTFO'd. So I also think we need to make sure that the nominee is also administrating the administration's values, that they're pro-labor, that they will be a champion for voting rights and for the protection of people's ability to vote, and also organize their workplace, among many other things. Environmental issues will also be huge, I imagine. So unless they are the most annoying, virtue-signaling progressive, it does not matter if they are a black woman to AOC. They need to be the right kind of black woman. That basically is just saying that we don't want Candace Owens. We don't want a Republican, a conservative black woman. They just want their kind who can advance all. They want their Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
They basically just want a statist who happens to be black.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes. But just to close this off, Biden will continue to virtue signal and still make no one happy, because the more you give them what they want, the more they will take from you, almost like a drug addict. And on that note, let's get into the video comments.
Wanting to start a book club, a friend suggested Africville as the first read, probably based on glowing reviews in the Canadian media. I'm glad to have read it, so you don't have to. Every character is black, but described according to how light or dark his or her skin is, which gets tiring very quickly. They are then described abominably. They either abandon their family, commit crime, or have prejudiced views. Each character dies off just when they might redeem themselves. It's supposed to be about a village near Halifax, but is a concoction by an American who appears never to have visited Nova Scotia.
Yeah, it does sound rather drab, doesn't it?
That sounds like a miserable reading experience. But then again, you were talking about Doomer memes at the beginning of this. There is a certain release that I think people get from a kind of performative depression, where to a certain extent it can be cathartic to engage in overly negative media. I mean, I've spent many a time when I was at university moping around to sad music, but that just sounds like slit wrist awful type
pretty
sort
much
of depression stuff right there.
Yeah, I won't be putting it on my reading list.
Me neither.
Hello again.
Hey.
I'm breaking keto because it's my dad's birthday and I'm finishing off this Canadian maple syrup in honor of the Canadian rallies up in the Great North that on behalf of Australians, libertarian supporting Australians, that we stand side to side with our Canadian brethren. So here's to Canada and Australia and the rest of the Commonwealth.
Here's to Canada, Australia, and the West of the Commonwealth, if I had a mug,
yes,
of course.
There's a mug there, but there's nothing in it, so
we'll share it.
There
yes.
you go.
There we are.
Here we are. Unity.
That was terrible, wasn't it?
Unity with our Commonwealth brothers, but also that I couldn't imagine just downing some maple syrup. That's gross.
No, that's brave. Brave.
Since April 2020, I've had no difficulty seeing COVID-19 as just a common cold. Oh, the common cold only infects the upper respiratory tract. That's where the symptoms are. Who would ever image the common cold to see if it actually is in the lungs? Common cold, why would you do so much research on it? It's like pointing out that skydiving has a risk of death, even if most of the people that jump end up surviving. Or being in a car accident doesn't mean your leg's broken. Could have just been a fender bender.
Why don't we have a vaccine for the common cold again?
I don't know. I'm pretty sure, well, as far as I'm aware, having never looked into it, it's just one of those things where I think the ability to vaccinate against a coronavirus is just known to be pretty impossible, as we've seen from the COVID-19, because of the fact that the actual vaccines themselves don't actually stop you from getting it. They make the symptoms a bit milder, and that's why we've got the flu vaccine, which you have to take yearly if you do take it, because it won't actually stop you from getting it.
No.
Just sharing a kind of an annoying realization I made. The other week, Callum was saying something about how a lot of people like Joe Rogan because he just talks like a normal person. You know, it's very normal people conversations. And now that video has gone around of him saying the N-word repeatedly, if you're talking to a leftist and you say you like Joe Rogan because he talks like a normal person, you know what their mind is going to immediately go to, and they're just going to call you a racist. So basically, the last week or so has just been depressing in the future of online dialogue.
Yeah, well, the left knows perfectly well that I haven't seen this video, so I am just basing this off of secondary information, really. He was using it in not exactly an inappropriate context.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't, from what I'm aware. He was just describing jokes by the likes of Richard Pryor and those kinds of black comedians who used the N-word constantly.
He wasn't directing it in a racialized way. He was referring to the...
There's a difference between saying the N-word in a derogatory manner directed purely at a black person to upset them, and saying it in a way that is just referencing it or quoting it. Even Anna Kasparian was like, okay, yeah, we've said the N-word a lot when we've been quoting other people saying, but I stand by that, which is honestly shockingly reasonable from her, and I actually respect her for standing by a standard, which I would
Did she defend Joe Rogan?
She wasn't necessarily specifically defending him, but it was one of those tweets that came out in the midst of all of this stuff coming out. So I think to a certain extent, probably also because of the fact that there was a compilation of the Young Turks going around saying the N-word as well. She was doing it as probably a self-defense sort of thing. But at the same time, there was a standard that she was upholding, which for the Young Turks is unusual, to say the least. At least there was that. At least there were some people on the left defending Joe Rogan. And also, if that's what how leftists are going to take it, if they're going to go like, oh, you think Joe Rogan talks like a normal person saying the N-word all the time? Just go, yeah. Just go, yeah. Because normal people aren't bothered by words.
No, it's the meaning. And meaning extends far beyond just the word itself.
Yeah, and plus that'll just make them more uncomfortable. Watch them squirm, it's funny.
Mm.
It's been fun listening to you guys at the Lotus Eaters and also Tim Pool in the way you guys say Canadian things and the way us Canadians talk. One of them being how you guys pronounce Ottawa correctly, whereas us dummies in Canada, we would say Ottawa or Toronto. We would say Toronto. Another fun one is the word water, where in Canada we just say water. Kind of we drop our T's for D's. It's kind of weird. Anyway, just some fun observation.
Water.
I know what you're talking about, mate. that was terrible. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, Americans.
Get out.
I know Canadians aren't Americans, but it's sort of like the similarities between the Canadian and American accent. You all do it. None of you know how to pronounce the letter T unless it's right at the beginning of a sentence. But at the same time, it's not like we don't make fun of each other's accents. Of course, down here, I'm some like rough northerner type.
He doesn't say scone properly.
I say scone like a real man, whereas you all sound like a bunch of southern dandies to me, so let's move on.
Okay, cut. So, okay, you're part of the counter-protest.
I am.
Okay, explain to the world what, I'm doing the what again, what are you counter-protesting? What is the purpose of the counter-protest?
The occupation of Ottawa has to end. I live just outside the red zone. It's appalling. I cannot go to an office building. I can't shop. I can't go to church. I cannot go to an office building. I can't shop. I can't go to church.
Uh-oh, retard alert. Retard alert, class.
What does that have to do with the protest? I'm sorry, you can't go to a random office building or church. Not that I imagine that you would be going to church.
Because the lorries are just blocking the street?
Oh, I can't pray with all this honking. Why won't the honking stop?
Oh. They're a psyop, I'm convinced of it.
What, leftists?
Yeah, yeah. Those people were.
Nye MechWorks vigorously tests each new product sent to our boys on the front line. Only the best for the mobile infantry. Although, one must say, they do need larger testing spaces. Even though the pandemic has hit us all hard, they're still doing their part to support our troopers. Would you like to know more?
Go check out youtube.com/ Nye MechWorks if you'd like to see more of that. I do love that sort of stuff. That's really awesome. I want to just equip the entirety of the army with these just to intimidate people as they see our gigantic mech suits approaching on the horizon.
Mm. I'd love to see Robot Wars back and to see this feature.
Oh, yeah, where you can just get in your robot that you've built and just beat each other. That'd be great.
So this crowd extends for a very long way, both up and down the street, full of happy, smiling people high-fiving each other, and there's not a mask to be seen, which is awesome. Right off from here, on the side streets, the pubs and restaurants were still open. They didn't look very busy, but I did see people calmly having dinner or a drink.
Nice, and also, that's excellent. It is wonderful to see. Michael and John are just pointing out that Tom and I are retarded because the irony of the irony of the Bay State video is the fact not going to go to work, church, and shops is also lockdowns.
Yes.
And because of the fact that that's what they're trying to stop the actual truckers from being able to do. So
I see.
I guess it hurts, doesn't it?
Mm.
I know this is really dumb, but I'm kind of interested to see what Whoopi Goldberg says when she comes back on her show with all the other cat ladies. I don't think she has anything interesting or like anything insightful to say. Just something really interesting and really odd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I think...
Yeah, pretty much.
I think Whoopi Goldberg's an idiot. And I think idiots often have very funny things to say about things.
No, but she has inaugurated, you could say, a very, very interesting discussion about what racism ultimately amounts to, which has kind of caused the critical race theorists to implode in on themselves.
Yeah, I suppose I've heard it described before that oftentimes it's good to have that friend who's a complete moron who doesn't even understand basic concepts, because it's actually very useful to reaffirm that knowledge in your own head by having to explain to them. For instance, if you didn't know why we wore shoes, it's something that doesn't come across. It's something I don't think about often. You just wear shoes because, you know, you wear shoes. It's like, wait, why do I wear shoes? You know, something like that. Or even just a basic concept like, what's gravity? And you go, oh, don't think about that often. So you have to sort of relearn it in your own head. It keeps you a bit sharper. But anyway, onto the video comment, well, onto the written comments off the website. Freewill2112 says, if the US intelligence services and other agencies that should be politically neutral are working for one political faction to the detriment of another, then the US has already become a dictatorship.
Yeah, if it turns out to be true. Yeah.
Yeah, if they're all funneled into one direction where they're only able to commit to the tasks that one side puts them on, that side has de facto control over the nation, sadly. The student of history says the US internal secret police back at it again, chasing dissidents, as they have been for decades, but it's only the right kind of dissidents. Agent 000 says, remember that Nixon had to go for far less shenanigans than the Democratic Party is into today.
Yep.
Sorry, one sec. Oh, God.
Wasn't crack, was it?
I was just keeping my smelling salts, I swear. Yeah, no, Nixon at this point is basically old news. Nixon did nothing wrong in comparison to the Democrats nowadays, but they're still going to hold that against him. Watergate is still going to be a watershed moment for society. Mm. Not because it's the first time that the government did anything wrong, just because it was one of the first times the mass public saw behind the curtain, so to speak.
And the media actually had the balls to hold the government to account when it did something wrong, which can't really be said.
Well, they only did that because they were Republican, though.
Yeah, that's
now
true,
we've
that's
taken
fair.
So many peeks behind the curtain that everybody's so jaded about it that nobody really cares as much anymore, which is awful.
Yeah,
because you need to keep caring about these things.
Yeah, just everyone except for Fox News seems to be just inextricably bound up
and funded by
government.
Bill Gates.
Yes, bound in some way to the government.
That too. Hammurabi the Sixth says Democrats illegally spying on their opponents. I've never seen that before. Me neither. Baron von Warhawk, I wonder how Republicans now feel, knowing that if they speak out of line, then Democratic secret police will go after them and their co-workers. If this is not the motivation to pursue impeachment after the midterms, I don't know what will. And that's the whole point, is it's an intimidation tactic to try and get people to shut up.
Yeah.
Basically, if you're questioning our methods, if you're questioning our narrative, then shut up or else we'll intimidate you, we'll smear you, and possibly even just arrest you. Free Will again says the globalist establishment are simply implementing their dictatorship step by step. In the not too distant future, they won't bother secretly conducting illegal searches. They'll be given establishing powers to search anything anytime without a warrant. They're already up overtly carrying out illegal arrests and searches when they can get away with it, as the Canadian truckers know. Yeah,
that's pretty much.
That's pretty much true. It is. They are trying to implement a dictatorship. I mean, Daddy Klaus has said that you will own nothing and you will like it. And how are they going to implement that? They're going to have to use the localized national governments to implement that globalist superstructure over the entirety of society. And they're barely even conducting secret searches at this point. You know, they got called out for it and they were like, yeah. Yeah, well, the door was just open, bro. What did you expect me to do? Not go in and look through your secret documents? But God.
It is funny. There's something almost very Russian about how they're going about this. I mean, the fact that this is being rightly identified, if the reports are true, as intimidation, is the fact that they're so nakedly going places where they shouldn't and being unapologetic about it, rather than giving, shall we say, palpable reasons as to why they may be doing it. They're giving bad reasons to basically send chills down the spines of their opposition, or so they hope.
Yeah, they're not even denying the allegations. They're just sort of sidestepping them by going, yeah, but, well, classic, you know, what are you going to do?
Machiavellian politics.
Mm-hmm. Oh, excuse me. Kevin Fox, if I were a Republican senator right now, I'd be scouring Chinese sweatshops to find out where the Democrats and their police stadsy are getting their own brown shirts made.
Good question.
Dave Carter, Washington, D.C. is a blue city. Every blue city has a corrupt as hell police force to enforce their inept nonsense. Notice how all the defund the police protests were in blue cities. Maybe it's time for people to realize the handlers of all of the attack dogs in blue are as culpable or more for this corrupt culture as the police themselves. Great point. You bring up a good point there, just talking about the police protests in blue cities, the defund the police. I would imagine that that sort of police protests took out a lot of the honourable cops from the departments, the ones who maybe were the best at their jobs but didn't want to put up with the sort of harassment they were getting up with, who probably decided, you know, screw this, I'm going to move to a red city instead. Yeah. So now all you're left with in those states may be just the bad cops.
The bad ones, yeah.
Yeah. UK Minicust says, dark to light, Ashley Babbitt was a hero and she was murdered unnecessarily. The British had got this completely wrong, calling her a thug and mourning the murder of the policeman. Who's the Britisher? Are you aware of the Britisher? Is that a YouTuber?
I think he might be. The name does sound familiar.
Yeah, no, if that's what they said, if that's what this person, the Britisher, said about it, that's completely wrong. She was trying 100%. To get in through a window and some guy shot her. And as Representative Nels said, if she had known that there was a guy pointing a gun at her before she tried to get through, she would have stopped.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as far as I'm aware, Bird didn't give her any warning. There was no, like, stop or I'll shoot, anything like that, just bang.
No.
Which means that he is a thug and a murderer, and he should be in prison.
Quite.
Student of history, love it when government agencies either say nothing related to the subject at hand or neither confirm nor deny. Mm. Safe as bet is, do you live on the planet Earth? You're probably either being monitored by the US or will be monitored by said government agencies.
See, that's important. Neither confirm nor deny. It's in that ambiguity is intentional.
Yeah, the incredibly neutral dialogue.
They're merely just reminding those who they're concerned about who holds the cards and power.
Yeah,
it's entirely threatening behaviour.
It is a warning, it's intimidation, and I don't like it.
Yeah. Anyway, on F1 drivers, Will the Impaler says that the motorsport scholarship programme could just be done by household income. Yes, I fully agree. But then you might get white working class boys who are eligible. That wouldn't be any good for the virtue signalling goals because they don't look diverse enough in the photo ops, precisely. But of course, doing this via household income is the fairest way of...
If you wanted to even out some disparities, potentially, generally speaking, household income is not an amazing register of wealth or not. Because
it's a far better
metric. Oh, it's far better than just going by skin colour.
Yeah, than basing policy on an abstract notion of privilege that's unproven.
And let's be honest, if society is as unfair and disparate in its outcomes as they suggest, going by household income, those low household income houses should give you a decent amount of black and other ethnic minorities as well.
Mm. I mean,
if society is built the way that you say it is.
I mean, I guess what I have in mind is that motorsport, this isn't so much for those wanting to go into engineering or media, but for those who want to be drivers, it's very much a rich kid's game. You either need a very powerful backer, as like Lewis Hamilton did with Ron Dennis, or you have rich parents like James Hunt. The door's pretty much closed to anyone who doesn't really have that weight. And having a scholarship based on household income, if you want to make racing more equal, that would be a better way of going about it. But anyway, I'll move on.
Oh, no, that's fair. As long as it's private businesses doing this sort of stuff, I don't mind. It's when the government steps in and tries to do this, it messes stuff up.
Yeah, quite. But Bob Bobson says, if the F1 drivers aren't allowed to kneel, how will I know how virtuous they are whilst they race in China, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Russia, Abu Dhabi, Azerbaijan and France? Quite. Chris Wolf says, next time someone advances diversity, tell them that diversity means brown people are different. Maybe that will show them they are the ones tokenizing people, since they must agree with that statement.
Yeah, I mean, they probably unironically do. It's just putting it in such plain terms is uncomfortable for them.
Yeah, very. But Charlie the Beagle says, I'm glad F1 drivers can't take the knee. It is the height of condescension that these incredibly rich drivers and athletes are taking a knee for black lives when they are living a life so far removed from the black poor people that they claim to represent as possible. If they were serious, they'd put their money where their mouth is. I think that any athlete that takes the knee should be taken to task and demanding that they volunteer to help serve the black communities, and not throwing money at them should not come. But I don't think that's a bad idea. But I think an even more effective strategy is to say, okay, what are you kneeling for? And then, of course, they're going to say, oh, for inclusivity, for equality. So I'm sorry, why do you think Black Lives Matter needs to annex those things?
Mm-hmm. Why do you think they need to be, why do you think yes. the sort of like idea of being fair to people and needs to be exclusive to this one organisation?
They'd be forced to admit that what they're doing is political, or they come to the realisation that it's political and stop bloody doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we'll move on. Titch Potato says that they seek to exclude white males from universities where they're already using their language underrepresented by a large margin is reprehensible. Although it is a good thing, I suppose, apprenticeships are more useful than universities anyway, silver linings and all that.
Yeah, I mean, when I have kids, if it's still the way it is, you know, by the time that they get to the age where they're going to university, I'm just going to be like, hey, take a trade or something. Don't go into university.
You still need to look far deeper though on why there is such a disproportionate outcome of, for example, white people or white men in certain industries. Is it because that someone is actually being denied the right to shot in that industry? Or is it because there are
there are plenty of variables regarding that. The problem is in trying to investigate that is that one, for the most part, outside of laws that are affirmative action based, that are positive discrimination, most of our laws state that it is illegal to do that already. And then when you are investigating these businesses for this sort of stuff, when you bring like class action lawsuits against businesses, the burden of proof to prove that you are not being racist already, simply due to disparities in outcomes, which could be due to, as you say, any number of factors, including going all the way back to wherever they originate from in terms of the subculture or the housing situation or parents and something like that, is that the burden of proof being put on people, on the companies, means that it's going to cost them a hell of a lot more money to actually fight any allegations in the legal courtroom and in the legal space than it is to just accept it, pay a settlement and say, okay, we'll be good here. And then the government gets to go, here's your new anti-racist training courses that you have to give all of your staff members. But this also does remind me that Ibram X. Kendi kind of almost tanked his career the other month when he admitted that white university applicants were putting themselves down as different races so that they would improve their chances of getting into university.
That's where we are. If you were genuinely advising someone who's unfortunate to be cis, white and male, you would encourage them to play the game of oppression Olympics for a scholarship, otherwise they'd have no blimmin' chance of getting it. Anyway, must move on. George Happ says, I do wonder if normies watching everyone are sick of the virtue signaling, similar to the football fans booing this ceremony of submission to a racial cult. If so, this may be a business decision for optics while they continue with the anti-woke discrimination. Chris Wolf says,
anti-white discrimination, because it could have been
anti-white discrimination, I stand corrected. Chris Wolf says, sorry lads, we were on our way to the YMCA when we noticed you hadn't left a do not disturb sign on your door. As public servants, it was our duty to disturb. We didn't find anything nefarious, but one of our agents dropped his stash on the ground. We could have avoided this arrest if you had just put a sign up.
Oh, I think this is in regards to my first segment, but yeah, that's a good one actually. Yeah.
Paulie P says, I'll translate the FIA statement. We don't like your kind around these parts. Bad luck if you're white. Right. And Anthony Parrish says, so is that what corporate progressives call music? So it seems. Though, of course, we're yet to meet the person who edited the video.
Yeah, you might want to brush up on your editing skills if you're the guy who did that.
Yes. Heavy reverb on top of Super Mario sounds.
It's terrible.
It's shocking.
And onto the crack pipes for everyone comments. Rose Gunella says, I think I have the Dems' new slogan, pacify and watch them die.
Yep,
if they were being honest.
Mm-hmm.
That Island guy says, Democrats, the unvaccinated are a burden on our healthcare system. We should solve this problem by making life more difficult for them to live and to work. Also, Democrats, crack addicts are a burden on the healthcare system. We should solve this problem by making it easier for them to smoke crack.
Kill the poor.
I'm a big genius and very smart. XYNZ, You almost got me there. XYNZ said there's something about the leftist mindset where quitting is always their first option. Nothing about perseverance, struggle, and overcoming a challenge in their mindset. It's always about rewarding the person who sits in the mud and wallows in their filth. Because according to their mindset, the only way that you would be in that position in the first place is if society is keeping you down, whether or not it's your own bad life decisions. And the only person who can pull you out is Big Daddy Government, who's only ever there to help you and never to just take your money or ruin your life or take away opportunities from you. Be it drug use and defecating in the street, giving in to the degenerate behaviours seen in the alphabet soups. Some of these topics that Harry has been covering, get the wood chipper. Oh God, no, I know I'm the almost swore there. I'm the nonce hunter of the Lotus nonce Eaters hunter. Now, which should be an honourable title, but just means that I get roped into all of the noncey topics and I hate it now. S.H. Silver says, either Biden's name is taking a page out of the critical race Bible by making things safer for addict mothers and their crack babies, or this is an elaborate setup to fuel another drug war, which he was a major proponent of. Interesting. Freewill2112 says, a government plan to push hard drugs to people is just a means to pacify the population dressed up in social justice language, another policy adopted from the pages of dystopian fiction and made fact. Absolutely right.
I agree.
It is Soma made real. Matthew Hammond, do we think that Hunter Biden was involved in pushing his father to provide crack pipe access for all? Look, I turned all right, Dad, so it can't help these. It can't hurt these people, can it? Alcibiades Nuts says, I know it's an overplayed meme at this point that Democrats are the real racists, but handing out crack pipes for racial equality, just saying that out loud is ridiculous. Really goes to show that not only what Dems believed is a part of black culture, but how incapable they think they are that they can't even destroy their own lives with drugs without government assistance. And that's about all we've got time for. I've been Harry. This has been my colleague, Tom. Thank you very much for checking us out. Remember to follow us all on Getter. I'm at Harry Lotus Eater, and you are at Thomas Dowling.
Thomas W. Dowling.
Thomas W. Dowling. Excellent. If you want to tune in, if you want to find out more, tune in tomorrow at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And if you're a gold tier member above, stick around for the live hangout later on today at 3:30. Oh, it's a premium, sorry, not gold member. So if you've got any membership with us, check out the live hangout at 3:30. Until then, I'll see you again. Thanks very much. Goodbye.